Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a monthly podcast about comic books.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And it's a dark day for Serious Issues. because this could be the last you hear Siobhan for a little while.
A little bit. Yeah.
What selfish reason are you using to
I'm take creating time off the podcast? Life. All right, guys? While you're all so sitting like around you. Doing nothing, I'm literally creating life like some kind of god. Is that an appropriate way to
Yeah, talk definitely. About it? Yeah. You got another baby about to come out?
Yep. About to come out. Yeah.
Of your nose.
Of my nose. That's where babies come from. I'm so excited to not be pregnant anymore. Pregnancy is terrible, everyone. God, don't do it.
What's worse, pregnancy or heroes in crisis?
I understand pregnancy more than I understand heroes in crisis. I don't really understand what happened there at all.
Do we say our names yet?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. How about do we say that every comic that we talk about on this episode, you can find at King's Comics in Sydney.
Yep.
403 George Street, Sydney.
For now.
For now. Moving and then moving again.
Yes.
But kingscomics.com is the place that they never move from. You can find all the comics that we talk about online there.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, no matter where you live in the world, they ship everywhere.
Yep.
If your comic book store is sold out, chances are King's probably has a copy.
Yeah, and we can track it down for you.
That's right.
And this week we have 40% off selected Harley Quinn merchandise. I just discovered that.
That's weird.
Yeah, you know, you might want to... I don't know. Pick
if you ha- if you had thing. To, if you had to have a massive statue of Harley Quinn in your house,
yep.
What would it be her doing, or like what era?
Serious answer. Like I'd have to have the Bruce Timm design and
sure.
Some cute thing from the animated series.
You don't
because
want,
any other version is like a bit horrifying. To
you don't
me.
Want the movie realistic Suicide
Squad
version.
Yeah, I want the Suicide Squad version. Cool, I want sweet. A life size Margot Robbie in my house.
But just as any one of her other characters.
Yeah. Not as Harley. I don't think that's her best role
Wolf,
by any
Wolf
means.
Wolf of Wall Street.
What else has she even done? I don't know.
Something else funny.
She's very talented.
Guys, we don't talk about comic book movies on this podcast.
Because I don't watch them. Or I do watch them and then I hate them and no one wants to hear about that.
We do talk about comic books themselves though. And every episode of Serious Issues, we kick off with First Things First, where we review all of the number one issues, the brand new series that started that we read in the last month. And we got a killer first one for you this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is Silver Surfer Black. It is the latest new Marvel number one by Donny Cates, a writer that Marvel is... treating like a king lately, and
yeah.
for good reason. All these comics are kind of fun and creative and all tie together in a fun way.
Yeah.
But what we're really excited about with this comic is this is the return to Marvel for one of our favorite artists, and that is the great Trad Moore.
The incredible Trad Moore. Good lord.
Who we so last good. Saw on that Alice Scott book, which was called...
The New World.
The New World. That was great. We were massive fans of him. It was a three-part... series he did with
Luther Strode. Luther Strode series.
How come I've got pregnancy brain, not you?
But I only remember
comics. That's
comics.
Great.
That's the only thing I can remember at the moment.
He did an excellent Venom one shot.
Yeah, that was incredible. I wish I had a copy of that.
I kept mine. I was like, hot shit.
Dumb. And also his
Ghost Rider.
His Ghost Rider was so
I remember
good.
That. Yeah. Now who's pregnant? But Silver Surfer Black is the combination of Donny Cates, Trad Moore, and Dave Stewart on colors too.
That's a good team.
It's an amazing team. And this is an incredible issue that, in spite of spinning out of Guardians of the Galaxy, even I stopped reading just because I was just over the Guardians, to be honest.
Yeah.
This has constant references to like issue 4 or 5 of Guardians, and has lots of moments where it's like, find out where these guys end up by reading this. And it's like, which is normally like pretty like, oh, this isn't very like, this doesn't feel like its own thing.
It does a good job of like explaining those things without having it be totally confusing otherwise. I hope I'm too sort of involved in comics to be able to really tell from outside.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
so I think it stands by itself.
Some big shit went down in the Guardians of the Galaxy issue, and Silver Surfer has been left drowning and unmoored in an endless void. We've all been there.
Yes, please.
And so this is like him initially saving a bunch of heroes. I was really bummed that he saved Beta Ray Bill, not because I wanted Beta Ray Bill to die. I wanted Beta Ray Bill and Silver Surfer to team up in a Tradmore drawn adventure.
That would be pretty incredible.
Hopefully that's what we get next. So this is basically Silver Surfer saving his friends and then like dissolving and recreating himself in a dark void. Using every single ounce of the power cosmic within him to save himself and
save a world that is about to be destroyed. It was a really I think Donny Cates does a good job of like encapsulating that sort of two sides of the Surfer, of like he was the Herald of Galactus and now he serves the greater good.
Yeah,
that sort of conflict within him.
And we often see Silver Surfer like, you know, oh no, I do good now, but yeah. we don't as often see him regret his past.
Mm-hmm.
And this has him like, yeah, like really
having a big old cry,
focusing on it. But it's
a big baby.
It looks so goddamn good.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. Like, to be totally honest, I'm not like, I think Donny Cates does a great job, but you want this book because of how it looks more than
definitely
what the story actually is. The story is like a fairly normal Silver Surfer story.
Totally. But then it ties in at the end. There's a big reveal where Silver Surfer crash lands on like a planet and stands at a big door. Mm-hmm. And when it opens, who should grab him and hold him off his feet? But an enormous, monstrous, ancient creature called Null, who you will know if you've read Donny Cates' Venom book. And that was like this, like, I could not believe how good the first 8 issues of Donny Cates' Venom run were.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of suggested that the symbiote has existed for millions of years and initially stems from this, like, ancient, like, weirdo called Null. It was cool to see him come back because I kind of stopped being interested in Donny Cates' Venom run when all of that like super crazy cosmic history stuff disappeared from it book and it became like a kind of angsty my dad is a dick book.
I sort of wish that Donny Cates' work wasn't always so self-referential, because I think sometimes it can be a little bit like, if you haven't read every single one of his books, you're like, like, the impact of that. I knew who Null was, but not because I'd read any of the Venom comics, just through osmosis. So,
I'm called Levins. I'm not osmosis. I recap comics that you don't read with you once a month.
That's a good point. But so it didn't necessarily have the, like, same impact for me, but it was, like, I mean, it's still great. It's still great, and it looks incredible. Like, it could have been anyone, and I wouldn't have cared, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, like, you pitch, like, an insane cosmic ride comic where, like, you know, the majority of it is spent, like, in a black hole and like, you know, characters being rendered to blobs and then rendering themselves back to non-blobs. I can't think of a better artist than Trad Moore to do that.
Absolutely.
And this was fun. I don't know. Is it a limited series? I assume so.
I think so.
Let's take a guesstimate. 5 issues. I guess 5 issues.
I'm going to say 6.
Phew, bold. Very bold.
6.
Okay, 6 issues. All right. Silver Surfer Black gets a big recommendation. I think you can definitely enjoy it, even if you have not been reading all of Donny Cates' Marvel stuff.
Yeah.
I've been even dipping my toe in and out of everything. But if you have been reading it all, I'm sure this is a very rewarding read.
And I managed to convince one of the girls who comes along to Queens of Kings has never read a Marvel comic. She has been reading DC comics for over 30 years. She's just like, hardcore DC. And she picked that up because it looks so good. And she was like, it's my first ever Marvel comic.
That's insane.
Which I was like, cool.
That's wild as hell.
Yeah. It's cool.
How could you, like, survive the New 52?
Determination and love of Wonder Woman. We'll get you through many things.
All right, sure. So speaking of DC, they released a big first issue for their. It's not an event. It's a.
I mean, it's literally called Event Leviathan.
That's true. Fuck.
But it's not. It's not an event in the sense. It's not a crisis.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
This is it's a 6-issue mystery thriller. Written by Brian Michael Bendis and regular collaborator Alex Maleev.
It is lovely to see Alex Maleev on a DC book.
Yeah. This was actually quite an understated book. I was not expecting it to be as kind of like, it's like weirdly calm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's quite like, gently paced.
Yes.
It's a nice, slow introduction to the story, maybe.
And what is that story, Siobhan?
So, guys, DC Universe has a lot of secret societies, but the worst one, or the something one, is Leviathan, and they've taken down in one day all of the others. So there's no more Spiral. The DEO is down.
Cobra,
Task Force X is
dead.
Fucked.
Advanced Cobra. Research Group. Oh, Argus. Dead.
Only Leviathan remains, and they're trying to take down
Argus's Superman. Logo is shitty.
Yeah, it is bad, isn't it? Because you can't even tell what the name is.
DEO is not for it. Like that's just a font.
It's just, yeah, it's just a font.
Task Force X, pretty rad.
Yeah.
And Cobra, definitely the best of them all.
Agreed. We've ranked them. Done. But this is like, I quite enjoyed this because those are sort of corners of the DC universe that I really enjoy. I love a good secret society.
I've just been staring at the logos and now I've come around and I think that the Argus logo is the best logo.
But it's, I don't know why it's like a sideways V with an eye peeping out.
Because they're looking at you out of their vaginas.
Steve Trevor, always watching via vagina.
all of the secret organizations have been disbanded by Leviathan, and this book introduces us to Batman interrogating Lois Lane. They suspect each other.
Mm.
Maybe one of them is Leviathan. They come across Steve Trevor. Maybe he's Leviathan. And then we have like a recount of what happened that day. Steve Trevor like escaped an explosion in what was to be the new Argus headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And then who else shows up? Ollie Queen. Ollie Queen, Green Arrow is there. And they all suspect each other, but they're going to try and meet somewhere else and figure out. Like they realize that they've been set up to be suspected to be Leviathan themselves. Can't trust anybody.
Absolutely.
And as they walk away, who should be watching them this whole time? But the question.
I love that. I love that reveal.
Who do you reckon the question is?
Surely it's the question.
No, but I mean, like, is it? There've been multiple questions over the years. Is it Renee Montoya?
I thought it looked like quite a mask question. So I assumed it was. Was it Vic?
Currently, yeah, Vic.
Time for a reread of 52, I guess. I can't remember the question's name.
Actually, there was a lot of Rucka love in this book. I mean, obviously, just all the secret organizations is very, very his specialty. Like that was certainly how I was introduced to all these weird organizations.
Absolutely.
And so there are a bunch of like new DC books starting, and Rucka is writing one of them.
Writing the Lois Lane book, which is like
that's great.
I'm so excited.
Is that going to spin out of this? I guess. Or?
Yeah, yeah. So there was that Event Leviathan like one-shotty thing.
I think I read
recently.
That. I can't remember if I did.
And it had like a little preview of this and then also one, like a short story
the
from
Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen. And then
which is a Matt Fraction on that
Matt
one.
Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber one.
Oh, fuck. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's really good.
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think I got that confused with that weird DC Villains one shot.
Which was less good.
Yes. I'm going to read this. This was just like a cool... Cool book featuring some characters that I like that I wish would kind of hang out more.
Absolutely.
Batman was like his least brooding. Like he wasn't even brooding that much in this book.
He was
book.
Just a detective.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
He was just detecting, which I love. And I like the team up of like these characters, and I like that it's going to take place over one night. I think that's kind of what they were saying.
Right.
I think that, yeah.
And Superman's nowhere to be seen.
It's nice and succinct. It's only 6 issues. I'm all in.
Yeah, me too. This is the Bendis book that I wanted from DC.
Yeah. Which, a rocket book.
Yeah. And yeah, Maleev draws the hell out of it. It looks excellent.
Yeah, yeah. It really is. It's very, like, gloomy and moody and draws a good Lois Lane. Yeah,
let me think how much I missed Bendis and Maleev's Dr. Doom as Iron Man.
Run. Oh, yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah, I never read it because I was annoyed by the concept.
Go back and read it now that you know it's completely finished and will never be referenced again. Yeah. It was only, like, 12 issues.
Is he a bad guy again? Does anyone know? Does
I
anyone
guess
care?
So. I think he's in Fantastic Four. We're not reading that.
No, I'm not reading that.
I got an Image number one this week. This is a series that I've never read before. It's a return of a long-running series called The Ride. And the latest iteration of it is called Burning Desire. Now, I didn't read it because I had any memory of what the ride is. I read it because it's written by Doug Wagner with art by Daniel Hilliard. And if those names sound familiar to you, they actually wrote and drew one of our favorite books of 2 years ago called Plastic.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So Plastic was this like
really... Wow, I'd forgotten all about Plastic.
Great, fucked up crime fiction
real
book.
Real super weird. About a dude who was in love with a...
Plastic doll.
Like a real doll. It was, well, she was even just like a blow-up doll.
He was in love with the concept of plastic, I think. Mm. Yeah. And he was like this like just an unbelievably... weird anti-hero.
Yeah.
That was a brilliant book.
That was really good.
So I picked this up because I knew that that was the same creators. And then there's even a backup story featuring art by Adam Hughes. And it's like... It's
very Adam Hughes. Yeah. There was a naked lady.
Naked lady who ends up killing everybody. Good Hooray. Shit. But this referenced all kinds of things that happened in the previous volumes of The Ride, which I think date back to like the 90s. So... I'm very, very intrigued because obviously we love Plastic. Maybe I should go read The Ride since there are only 2 volumes of it.
Okay. That's achievable.
The initial run was like only 2 issues long. I might go check it out. But I don't know if this weird description of a book that I didn't understand is enticing to anyone to check out. Maybe check out Plastic for sure.
Definitely check out Plastic. That was a weird, fun book.
But yeah, at some point in my life, I'm going to read all of The Ride.
Nice.
What do you have to say about that, Siobhan?
Absolutely nothing. It is how much shorter is First Things First now that Image are putting out way less number ones.
Oh, and I'm also like I pick some up. I think like when the way we're used to this show, I would read the number one no matter what.
Yeah.
Now I'm like
a lot of these look like shit.
No, or it's just like if something is clearly not for me. Like I even picked up the Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo new Batman book.
Oh yeah, you didn't read it.
And I got a few pages into it, and I was just like. I don't need to be critical of this.
Yeah.
I've said that I'm not a fan of everything that they've done before, so why say it again?
Yeah. I did read all the way through, and it was more enjoyable than I anticipated, and Capullo's art is, like, exceptional. But, again, it's not a Batman story that I'm especially interested in. I'm not... Like, if you love Scott Snyder's take on the Batverse, well,
it absolutely should exist.
I'm not one of those guys.
I'm not one of those guys. I don't like this, so it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about Superman Year One by Frank Miller and John Romita Jr., which I haven't even read yet. But like,
no, I'm not going to read that.
Have you seen some of the...
I mean, like, the Frank Miller covers are pretty something else.
Apparently there's a gang rape scene in it.
Yeah, yeah. Someone was telling me that. That's insane. I mean, in a Superman book. I know it's a Black Label book, but in a Superman book.
But also, like, who is like, oh, cool, like, you know, it's an adults only line. Better do a gang rape scene with super in a Superman book.
Literally Frank Miller.
We've never done this before, everybody. It's truly groundbreaking stuff. Anyway.
Love Frank Miller. What a good guy.
What have you wrote over there?
I've got first issue of Clue, Candlestick, published by IDW and written and illustrated by Dash Shaw, who is a indie cartoonist. The only book that I've read by him was called like The Bottomless Belly Button or something. Oh. And all this stuff's published by Fantagraphics.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's really good. He's very interesting. It's very, it's quite like Rich Tomasso, but maybe a little bit more highbrow or something. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'll look
Maybe
at
just
shit.
Just because his stuff is published by Fantagraphics. Anyway, so IDW have been putting out really interesting, fun, weird comics based on the board game Clue.
Yeah, we get a miniseries once a year, and they're all wildly different.
And this is a really fun one. So it's just like the first issue is just the setup as we see the sort of you know, the murder happen,
and
everyone starts to suspect each other, and you get like the literal. Board game
the
set
layout,
up,
the map.
Layout, and it's just like
where's the list of all the weapons? Oh, there they are on the front cover of the next issue. Great,
and they talk about all of the different weapons the whole way through as you meet each of the characters.
That's great. So it seems to be like this seems to be the most meta of all of them so far.
Yeah, and so it's incredibly enjoyable. I really liked it. The art's really exceptional. The colors are gorgeous. It's really fun if you have an affection for the game, which I really do. Like, I play a lot of Clue. Or, as we call it in Australia, Cluedo, for some reason.
Who do you play Cluedo with?
Well, I did as a child. Oh, I don't now.
You said play. You didn't say played.
I said played.
Okay. I'll allow this.
Either way. Anyway.
I can't imagine you playing Cluedo with Nate.
I know.
Actually, I kind of can. I feel like you'd get really into
it. You know what we play a lot of is we have an old Wheel of Fortune board game. We play a lot of that.
Who wins more?
Nate, because he's a jerk. He won chess one time against him, and I took a photo with it because I was like, he's never going to let me win again. And he never has. He's incredibly petty. But this is great. If you like, if you have an affection for the board game, and if you like, even if you just like detective fiction, this deals with like a lot of big archetypes and a lot of the tropes of the genre. But I mean, there's moments where they're literally in the garden and she's finding keys that are hidden under like the actual tokens from the game, like these huge tokens from the game.
Oh, this seems great. This is way more about the last one. Good. I read the first issue of, and it was a bit too like the one of the suspects was a reality TV star. And
yeah,
one of them
yeah,
was
yeah,
a, like,
yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, I don't need this. But this
I still enjoyed that. But this is very literal.
And like, it's the Rich Tommaso comparisons are very apt. It looks like this looks like another artist that was very inspired by Dan Clowes and has kind of like simplified his style and made it his own. Good shit.
Yeah, really great. Really great. I really highly recommend that.
It's called Clue Candlestick.
Yeah.
By Dash Shaw through IDW. Did you read Jughead's Time Police?
Okay, it's sitting next to my bed, but I haven't gotten it.
It's pretty fun. I don't know if I need to read more than just one issue of it, but the concept of it is pretty fun.
Oh, wait, did I read it?
It's written by Sina Grace with art by Derek Charm.
Ah, yes. Okay, I did read it because I remember being like, I love Derek Charm. I am not sure if Sina Grace's voice is perfect for this book.
I think he writes a pretty fun Jughead. The rest of the characters,
yeah,
less so.
Yeah.
But yeah, after accidentally putting fish sauce in a pie crust, Jughead is banned from a pie making competition for life, and so his world has ended.
Mm-hmm.
He decides to build a time machine to kind of go back and stop himself from putting the wrong ingredient in the pie crust.
It's pretty good.
It's a very, very simple setup. I've never read like a sci-fi kind of caper Archie book before. I'm sure they exist in some way, shape, or form.
Like, Jim was laughing. He was like, man, Archie are just trying everything now. Have you seen the one that's coming out this week? Jughead's Time Police. And I was like, actually, I think you'll find that Jughead's Time Police is a classic Archie strip.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a concept that has existed before. And that like character who's like Archie's great granddaughter or something.
Her name is at the end. She's visited by someone whose name is. Oh, I don't know. Here it is. January McAndrews. Yeah. And she's from the future, and she's
looks like a girl Archie.
Come with me to the future.
And I love this book because you get. I love any book that has hot dog thought balloons.
Yes.
Great.
Hot dog is Jughead's dog.
Yes.
He's very cute. Good dog. One of the best dogs.
Good dog.
You never see him at the top of best dogs in comics lists.
Yeah, that's actually true.
But look, I thought this is totally fun. I probably won't read
Inessential,
any more of it.
But yeah. Enjoyable.
I think, but that's kind of
that's comics.
That's one of those, especially Archie comics.
Yeah.
It is like, you know, if you're in the mood for them, it's the best thing ever. But you're not always in the mood for them. Hmm. What do you want to talk about next? Because that's the end of my number ones.
Marvel or DC?
Well, DC's closer. Do you want to do DC? Okay, DC, at the very top of my pile over here, I got the Wildstorm, issue number 23.
Hell yeah.
Because the second last issue of this run, last month, I was like, this all just feels like a big setup, and then we're not really going to get what happens next, which is what I'm really, really interested in. We've spent 24 issues almost with Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt and Steve Buccellato. We're rebuilding the Wildstorm universe in this like very, very fun, closed off run. It's like, you know, this is the only thing you need to have read.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't tied into anything. But yeah, like it has been a lot of setup. I was like, how are they going to wrap all this up in the two final issues or whatever. And sure enough, Warren Ellis has announced that he's got like another two short series based on this.
Yep. So one is going to be, Wildcats, which has our favorite bro, Ramon Villalobos on art.
Fucking hell. Are you serious? Oh my God, that's so awesome.
I'm really excited. I'm very, very excited about that.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Because he got fucked because he made that comic with that asshole.
Yeah.
And like had to end it midway through after like such an amazingly fun concept.
And then what else is coming out? That's the main one I think that's been announced, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm super excited for that.
Dude, Roman Villalobos and Warren Ellis. That's like a dream team. That's exciting.
I think it's
going to
be really fun.
Yeah, great. So, the Wildstorm issue number 23. This whole thing has been, you know, a war between the highest in power on Earth and then the highest in power in space.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the various superpowered humans that either side created trying to stop the Earth from exploding because of their war.
Yeah.
And I've been introduced to tons of familiar faces. However, they're like, you know, they're newer, modern versions of them. And I, for the most, like, for almost all, I love all these new iterations of all these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm like any, I'm not a massive Wildstorm nut.
No, so, for me, this was kind of fun because it was like being introduced to many of these characters for the first time because I've read so little Wildstorm. So I don't know anything about any
I wish it was
people.
More available. You need to like, yeah. a lot of it isn't available digitally. And then like, if you want to, it's not in print anymore as well. Yeah. Like there's like so much, like I really want to read all of Gen 13.
Oh yeah.
Particularly the Adam Warren stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of the Joe... is it Joe Casey? I can't remember. Did he do? Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah, someone. Yeah, that's a big patch that I would love to one day read. But it's really hard to track down and go to buy like out of print trades and shit or read it illegally. But anyway, Wildstorm 23, this is like really, really shaping, like moving towards a very exciting finale of all of these different heroes coming together to fight. Sick. It's great.
It's been like a super satisfying run. And like, I really enjoy the lovely Nate. Was saying he doesn't necessarily love this because he feels like everyone's voices are a little bit samey, which I agree with because Warren Ellis just writes Warren Ellis, and if you don't like Warren Ellis's voice, don't bother. But if you do, great.
Yeah, there are definitely characters that his voice works a lot better on. Like for instance, his take on Midnighter is just wonderful.
Yep, and the old guy. Who's the old guy? Who's the bad guy?
Bendix.
Yep, Bendix. That's great. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's real good shit. Anyway, very, very excited for the final issue of this, and then now even more excited for the Wildcats book. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you still keeping up with Doomsday Clock?
Yes.
Yeah, so this issue number 10 came out. We know that like issue number 11 and 12 have been delayed, which means that this 12-issue event is going to be like 4 years long or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
4 years since the Rebirth. Like, has it been 4 years since Rebirth started now? I can't remember. Whatever. All those concepts were introduced, and we won't see a payoff for them for quite some time yet.
Yeah.
This is written by Jeff...
Johns.
Jeff Johns. I was like... I had Jeff Shaw on my brain because we just did the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. Jeff Johns and art by Gary Frank, colors by Brad Anderson. And, you know, this whole time I've been waiting for this big fight between Superman and Dr. Manhattan. Because, of course, this is the coming together of the Watchmen universe and the DC universe. And
the thing that no one has ever actually wanted.
Yeah, but I was kind of like, you know, what are they going to do? Are they actually going to fight? You know, what's going to happen? And this actually, I loved this issue. I thought this issue was like super cool and weird.
You know what? Like, I enjoy this in a very, very gentle way. Where it's just kind of interesting seeing Dr. Manhattan interact with the DC universe. And like the various little changes and things that he's made. It seems so, like, I wish that they hadn't sold it as something that was really integral to, like, continuity in the DC universe, because as a thing on its own, it's pretty, like, it's good, and Gary definitely. Frank is, like, great, and it's pretty enjoyable, and it's not offensive in any way, but making it this, like, central part of, like, why the DC universe is shaped the way that it is right now, I find annoying, and I think it's, like, hampering the actual story.
Definitely. The implications of what the events that we see in this issue in particular mean, I don't like, because it's pretty much saying, well, every problem you've ever had with DC Comics in the past, ever, it's all Dr. Manhattan's fault. He did it, not the editors.
Yeah. Like, some serious blame shifting.
But the way this is shown, like, you know, every writer that's been writing comics for longer than 20 years at some point will be like, okay, time to do a comic that celebrates the medium of comics.
Yeah.
In a very meta way. And this is Jeff Johns' take on it, where we have Dr. Manhattan going back to when... the 30s and watching Superman introduced to the world, and then moving to the 50s and watching him be introduced to the world again differently, and how that affects all the characters that he left behind who are also around in the 30s. And it's all about, like, you know, resetting comic book universes and reintroducing characters and changing the ages of some character to suit.
Oh, wow. You get a little willy. Do you think that's his willy, or do you think that's just his part of his leg?
I reckon that's leg, but who knows? I love that. Like, I'm trying to talk about what's
what's
important. No, this is great. This is prime serious issues. I'm like, here's what I think this book's trying to do, and then all the while,
they're brave enough to actually draw listening. A willy.
And you're like, is that a penis?
So sorry. Anyway,
but yeah, I thought this was really interesting, and like a fun take. I wasn't expecting this from the book. I don't want to see like a big dumb fight between Superman and Dr. Manhattan.
No, because that's not interesting.
I want it to be like this like very cool, weird history book featuring Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. That's a much more satisfying.
As like a Forrest Gump kind of figure that was just kind of there for everything. Yeah,
it's good.
I like it more as a watcher though, more than a causer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to resolve this, but I actually am very keen for the finale now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I enjoy that Gary Frank still draws young people like a horrifying nightmare. He just can't draw young people's faces. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
How exciting is the Legion news? Also, that Bendis is going to be doing Legion with Ryan Sook.
Do I want Bendis on Legion? I want him on less books. That was what
That's true.
His problem at Marvel was that he burnt out.
I'm mostly just excited about Ryan Sook.
Yeah, of course. It's a great choice of artist. I don't know. Have him, because he's... Why don't have him oversee stuff, not necessarily write it?
Yeah.
Co-write the first issue and then...
a two-issue mini event.
Okay, that's fine. Okay,
oh,
fine
no, wait, hang on. There's a mini event and then it will lead into Bendis and series.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So that is Doomsday Clock, issue number 10. I actually enjoyed this series overall way more than I thought I would.
Yeah. I like Gary Frank a lot, so I'm willing to accept a lot of nonsense.
Definitely. So I caught up on Green Lantern, both 7 and 8. We talked about 7 last month, but I'd missed it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the issue in which Hal is trapped inside of his ring.
Yep.
And the ring itself manifests itself inside its ring as a character that Hal has to save against like another being of fear that lives within Hal's ring that's trapped there. And the whole thing is written as prose, which normally when Grant Morrison did, I remember he did it on a Batman issue years ago when I was very early into getting into comics. And I was like, what is this?
I didn't buy this to read.
But this was a phenomenal issue. Yeah.
It's really good.
So good.
I'm on like this massive, I've been rereading a whole bunch of Grant Morrison stuff because I'm just like so obsessed with how good Green Lantern is. And it's making me go back and reappreciate all the great shit he did before.
So I bet you must have loved the absolute fuck out of issue number 8.
Oh my God.
Of the Green Lantern. Of course, this is Grant Morrison writing, Liam Sharp on art. And who's the colorist? Someone Olif. I think it's at the end there. Get away from me, you weird Krypton back matter.
Isn't that horrible? It looks terrible.
All the DC books at the moment have like 3 pages of a Krypton comic. Tying into the sci-fi TV series show. Look, I don't know who the colorist in this book is, but the colors are lovely.
The colors are great. It's very like the colors suit the art, which is very like
Steve Olif.
There you go.
Olif. So this is a team up.
Space
book.
Junkies. Sorry.
Space Junkies. Yep. It's a team up book between Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen. If you read is it Dennis Adams? Dennis O'Neill. Sorry, wait. Who is it? I always forget the legendary.
Neil Adams?
Neil Adams and Dennis. No.
Danny O'Neill?
Is that who did the Green Lantern, Green Arrow run? You look it up. Otherwise, actually, I feel like no one who actually cares that listens.
That's true.
But it's like a classic run in the 70s that was very political. It's the one where they...
It was called Green Arrow, Green Lantern. And there was the classic, My Ward is a Junkie.
Where Speedy is caught doing heroin.
Yeah.
It was also like very like kind of political of its time and like
Dennis O'Neill and Neil Adams. We were pretty
I think I said
and Dick
O'Neill.
Giordano. Dick Giordano.
Yeah. Legends.
I can't make words. But yes, great.
And I've read and even seen live Grant Morrison talking about how much he loves that run and has always wanted to do his own take on it. So I knew that an issue I was hoping multiple issues like that run were coming up in Grant Morrison's Green Lantern run. And this did not disappoint at all because in this they are exposed to a weird alien drug. And so this entire book is just a bizarre hallucination with so many... Well, like it's partly hallucination, partly them catching up, partly them like solving a crime. Then there's like a weird alien called Zine Lantern.
Zine
Arrow, who's a giant version of Oliver Queen.
So fun. Like, really hard to even put into words what happened in this issue, but, like, incredibly enjoyable. Looks great. Super referential of, like, sort of 70s sci-fi comics from England. Like, I I love this so much, guys. Yeah.
This was an amazing issue for sure. I always find myself like the first page is always like a bunch of weird aliens and just absolute babble.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this again.
Morrison.
And then like within two pages, I'm like, oh yeah, I love this. I forgot.
Yeah. It's just, like, it's just so fun. And there are so many like silly moments. Like there's an assassin on the moon. So they make a giant green bow to fire a huge arrow at the moon. He goes, shoot an arrow at the moon is your idea? How high are you right now? Extremely, but I'm focused on the mission. Ah!
So much
everything
fun.
I want.
Very good.
I love it.
The Silencer.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, well, there is one issue left
of
this book that I think was far and away the best of DC's New Age of Heroes, which
easily.
Is a thing from millennia ago that no one remembers.
No.
It was 1 year exactly. DC introduced a bunch of books called the New Age of Heroes that put artists first and writers second. And then
change the artists every couple of weeks.
So I think The Silencer has had six different artists, but Dan Abnett has been writing the hell out of this book. And I'm looking forward to this being over so it will be collected and more people will hopefully check it out.
Yeah.
The Silencer is a... she works for Leviathan, was trained by Talia al Ghul. When she clicks her fingers, she can enter her victims in a sphere of silence, and so she can dispose of them. And no one around her will be any the wiser. But this is also was about family, because when we were introduced to this character, she had given up her life of being an assassin and was just trying to have a life with her family, her husband and her son. And Talia Ghul shows up and tries to take that away from her, and actually does.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we are seeing this, like, yeah, it's kind of, I don't want to reveal too much of the plot, but we've seen so much of her husband kind of left in the lurch and never work it out, like that
she's an assassin.
Yeah, and like we're so used to seeing that from like it's the dumb wife,
or the dumb girlfriend not
knowing that they're dating or married to a superhero, and it is fun seeing the reverse of this gender wise. And I just think the Silencer as a character is really cool, and I hope she joins like a bat team or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or like shows up in Event Leviathan or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's been a cool addition. I feel more so than the other characters.
Yeah, fuck all the other characters.
Sideways.
Oh my god, yeah. Or the one that was not the Hulk but was totally the Hulk.
Rampage.
Wow, you really remember everything.
Such useless information.
Hey, speaking of Bendis writing too many comics, I still am reading Naomi.
Okay, this has been like selling out, so I haven't even gotten to read the last couple of issues, which I'm annoyed about because I was genuinely enjoying it.
So this is co-written with David F. Walker and Jamal Campbell on art. I love Jamal Campbell's art.
Yeah.
It's really probably the best thing about this book. The whole book it's about a girl who lives in a boring town with no heroes in it, but when Superman crash lands there one day, she starts asking questions about superheroes, and then her backstory, and then we learn that she has like a crazy alien backstory.
Cool.
And this has just been kind of like five issues so far of that. And her past and learning about it and why it was kept from her. And I got to the end of this issue and I was like, that's fine, I guess. I don't really need to read much more of this. And then it says to be concluded. So there's one more issue, so I'm going to stick with it and read one more issue.
Might as well.
But it's been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going to do with this character now.
Probably nothing. She'll probably just get ignored.
I kept this here because I'm sure you've read this.
You know, I haven't actually read this issue yet, but I am excited to do it.
This is the last
comic. I've read half of it.
Last comic in my stack that I didn't get around to today, but it's another one of the Wonder Comics DC books, and it's Wonder Twins, written by Mark Russell and art by Stephen Byrne, who also did art on that Mera graphic novel that you talked about a couple months ago.
I prefer his art in this.
Yeah, because I checked it out later and I was like, I'm pretty sure in the same episode you said I love Stephen Byrne.
Yeah.
And then when we were reviewing the Mera book, you're like, I don't know who the artist is, but I don't like his art.
I found the art in the Mera book weirdly like static.
It's probably
you
like
know?
Yeah, subdued maybe. Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, it's fun in this, and I haven't read this issue, but I'm just bringing it up because they've announced that what was going to be a 6-issue run on Wonder Twins is now a 12-issue run.
Which is so nice. You get that so rarely. It's always like, this ongoing series has been cut down to 6 issues. It's nice to get something that's doing well.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, it's I struggle to find reasons to be excited about DC at the moment. So that's definitely one I'm going to share. Yeah. And then on the back, you turn the comic around, and there's an ad for that Swamp Thing series that was cancelled after one week.
I know, but apparently that was because of some
tax.
Yeah, tax based reasons.
Yeah. Oh boy. You want to do Marvel or Image?
Wait,
next?
Hang on. I still haven't spoken about Deceased.
Okay.
Issue 2 by Tom Taylor.
So Marvel or Image?
It's a good issue. I enjoy this. It's very silly. If you enjoyed his Injustice stuff, I don't see why you wouldn't enjoy this. Because
there
is
a virus that is transferred to people looking on their phone.
But why is that not good? Why is that not a really clever way of spreading the anti-life equation? It makes the most amount of sense. It makes the most amount of sense. If you're writing something that's set now.
Okay, yeah, all right. I don't know.
You're just mad because you'd immediately get the virus. You'd be the first zombie.
So with all of our listeners listening on their phone.
Yeah, I know. But this is really fun. This was fun in a kind of Tom Taylor doing horror kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I like that it exists in its own universe, because then he can do some stuff that's actually Alfred. Do I want to give away the last page? Probably not. Anyway, Alfred has to do something terrible to his son.
Who's his son?
Bruce.
All right.
But, there's some great, Oliver Queen and Dinah stuff happens. And then...
Okay, cool. That was the best thing about him. I'm sure this is a very quick read. Maybe I'll just burn through this.
It is a quick read. And it's pretty fun. And it's pretty satisfying. We get to see her become a Green Lantern. Great.
Dinah?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's really fun.
Green Canary.
Green Canary, exactly.
That's fun. Okay. You've sold me on this. I'm going to read it.
Ha.
I didn't like that first issue.
Now we can talk about
it. I'm a dummy, maybe.
You're a dumb.
Marvel or Image?
Should we just do Marvel?
Okay,
we can talk about fun things.
Okay, sure. War of the Realms, issue 4 and 5, written by Jason Aaron with art by Russell Dauterman, and colors by Matthew Wilson. Issue 4, just a solid event book.
Yep.
I'm like, this is for an event book. This is super fun.
Absolutely. Russell Dauterman doing incredible work.
Unbelievable art and yes, there's heaps of references to a bunch of spin-off series that I've not read any of. But who cares? It's fine. I felt so proud of myself for not reading any of the spin-offs. I don't know, a great person. Then, on Saturday night, I read issue number 5 of War of the Realms.
Yep.
And this is the one that kind of reintroduces all the teams after they've gone off and done their side missions in the spin-off books, but does so in a way where I was like, oh, damn it. I didn't read any of the spin-off books.
However, I did read a lot of the spin-off books, and to be honest, I think you could do without.
Okay, sweet. It was just so epic in scope.
Yeah.
It brought together so many heroes who were all having separate adventures, eventually coming towards or working towards the same goal. Mm-hmm. I feel like so many event books try to do this, and it doesn't feel as huge as, mm-hmm. as it should be. This felt like, and I know you don't like it because it's a movie, this felt like Endgame.
Yeah,
all these characters coming together. It was a feeling that I hadn't felt since watching that.
I feel like that is what event books ideally should do and should feel like. And this feels I love a lot of the older DC events.
Definitely, hell yeah.
So for me, this felt, this feels really proper. Feels
yeah,
really good.
When
I enjoyed it.
When I think of event books, I think of the earlier Crisis books and that kind of stuff. Infinite Crisis, for me. Even though I'm sure if I reread it again, there'd be flaws. But that was the coolest event ever when I was reading it. Then it ends on one of the greatest cliffhangers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That when I turned the page and realized that was the end of the book, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was just think this was not only the easily the best issue of War of the Realms so far, but probably my favorite Marvel comic that I've read this year.
Okay.
Just in terms of having all those characters together and doing it. I was as a massive Jason Aaron fan, I feel like I haven't loved everything that he's been doing mm-hmm. in the last year, or certainly not as much as how I used to do it. And this book was just
Yeah. It's an incredibly satisfying conclusion to his Thor run, and just sort of playing with all those threads and all those things that he's been setting up for so long, and all these characters that he now knows so well. It's just, yeah, it's really clever, and it's nice to get this far into a Marvel event and not be now it's falling apart.
Well, so I got to this and I was like, oh wow, it's the end of issue 5. Gee, the next 5 issues are going to be awesome. And then I looked and there's only one more issue.
Yeah, nice.
I couldn't believe it.
Keep it tight.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, this event books rarely have you wanting more because you're like, there's too much of this event. This is stupid. This is just like pure. I mean, it helps that Dorderman is drawing it. Like, you can't ask for a better artist on
every issue. It's so gorgeous.
This just feels like Marvel have finally gone like, we fucked up every single year in the last two decades with our events. How can we make this one perfect?
And they have. We don't need to like extend it unnecessarily by three issues and get in a bunch of filler artists who change the tone of the book dramatically.
Joe Quesada, you don't have to draw an issue this time. You know, you're in trouble where it's like, oh, and Joe Quesada's drawing the last issue. I'm like, oh, why is he doing that?
The only thing is that there's a cool giant panther monster on the front of that cover.
Oh, where is he?
I don't think ever showed up.
Damn.
Everyone's riding on a big panther.
Art Adams covers have been so good.
Yeah.
Also tying in. So I have been reading small amounts of tie-ins. Obviously, I've been keeping up with...
most of the Marvel comics have had like at least one tie-in issue.
Yeah. But Jason Aaron's Thor run is still continuing. And we got a great issue featuring Kull. And Kull is, of course, Odin's long-lost brother. The Fear...
Fear God. Something.
Yeah, God of Fear.
God of Jerks.
And yeah, it was a great issue written with art by Mike Del Mundo. I forget, Cull's like, he's like the main bad guy in Fear itself, right?
Yeah.
When he returns. Yeah, right. So it's cool that like Jason Aaron kind of made him into this like sympathetic character. And this issue was like a really, really cool issue that I feel like anyone else would have just worked into the main event, but it's completely standalone.
Yeah, it's really, that was a nice issue. It was really well done.
Yeah. Again, helps it.
Enjoyable.
Del Mundo on art, you know, it's
although just, I haven't necessarily loved Del Mundo on all of this Thor run because sometimes I feel like his stuff is a little like I want things to be a little bit more
yeah I totally agree with you
but like grounded or yeah something no totally in a with Thor
you
book.
No, I think it was the like Del Mundo does so well like the Weird World books that he did were so well because they were very low on dialogue
whereas
Jason Aaron was trying to put so much into the building towards World of the Worlds. So I don't think Del Mundo was a very good choice, but in an issue like this which is focused on one character,
perfect
yeah, so good. I also read Giant Man 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And this,
I read issue 1 and was kind of like, I don't need this.
Well, I just keep I keep wanting Leah Williams to reach those heights that we got of those two X-Men one shots last year. What were they again? There was the Emma Frost one.
Yeah, and there was the
Magic one.
Yeah,
they were both like two of the best comics I read last year. I thought, you know, oh, maybe she would like bring the magic to a limited series. And the concept is so fun. It's Scott Lang, aka Ant-Man, Raz, aka Giant Man, Tom Foster, aka Goliath, and Eric Josten, aka Atlas. All four of those characters can get real big.
Yeah.
And so this book is called Giant Man, and it is about them posing as frost giants to try and save Florida, which has been overrun by frost. And there were good moments in it, but yeah, I mean, like, it was just sweetly inessential.
Yeah, I look forward to the day when Leah Williams like gets a proper book and isn't just doing like the kind of filler stuff that Marvel get all the young people to start
on. Yes, totally. Give her an Emma Frost book.
Yeah.
We need an Emma Frost book. That'd be so good. Yeah. Maybe
after Hickman's.
Hickman can set it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marco Castello and Rochelle Rosenberg on art and colors on this, and it was fine.
Yeah.
Have you read any other tie-ins?
Yeah, but I can't remember like any of them.
So none of them were like people should read this, or was it just like it's fine?
No. Everything was like super inessential, I would say.
Okay, cool.
I didn't really enjoy any of them.
The ones where like they send like different groups of heroes to different parts of Midgard, that seemed fun. Those are the ones that I want to check out. The war stories. I don't know what the fuck it was called. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Taylor did one that looked pretty good. Yeah.
Yes, there was some good shit in that.
And there were some fun looking team ups. That's what those spin-offs should be.
Absolutely.
We got a very fun issue of Avengers that tied into War of the Realms. Issue number 19, written by Jason Aaron with Ed McGuinness on art and Mark Morales, Justin Ponsor, all kinds of artists and cover. Lots of people. Lots of different inkers.
Love Ed McGuinness. Everybody.
Yeah, and man, it's great Ed McGuinness work on this in this issue. It's surprising that we got him on like an event tie-in issue of the Avengers that didn't even feature the Avengers. This is
totally it's all about Gorilla Man.
Gorilla Man. So obviously we loved it. We're the target audience of any animal.
I love big monkeys.
Yes, I especially loved like the opening scenes of him like turning down a drink with the Russian bear character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was great seeing like Gorilla Man have to prove himself in a fight to almost death against invading forces. It was sick.
I love how like
and then a really really tragic reveal at the end.
Yeah, that was a great issue. That was like a really solid really fun issue that like stands by itself, but also is totally relevant to everything that's going on.
And it's cool. This is totally set. Instead of just only being about War of the Realms, this is setting up what's going to happen in the Avengers book next.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Dracula is involved. Hooray!
Hooray! And then Ed McGuinness draws a like dangerously sexy Black Panther with it, like they always have to put loads of shadow over his crotch because it's so his. He draws his costume so skin tight.
That's
you're
great.
Like, where's his dick? I love it. It's the best.
It's in Doomsday Clock, issue number 10.
He keeps it in Wakanda.
Looks like Captain Marvel is a tie-in.
Yeah,
as well.
So I read, I am still reading Captain Marvel, largely, but the Kelly Thompson run. This has art by Anna.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Paola Martello and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. So this is the tie-in issue to War of the Realms, which basically sees Captain Marvel fighting Enchantress alongside Doctor Strange and Black Widow. And I think my main critique for this is that, again, Kelly Thompson is, maybe it's just because it was a tie-in issue, but she's slightly fallen back into the, like, every female character is quirky and sassy in the same kind of voice. So, like, it's the sassiest Black Widow I've ever read. And, the like, Captain Marvel's trying, like, making mad jokes, which are, like, not that Captain Marvel has an exceptionally consistent character, but I would have said making sassy jokes is not probably part of it.
So when we first started this run, we were actually commending Kelly Thompson on not making every character a sassy quipper.
Yeah.
But it looks like that's what's happened now, I guess.
But it ends with Captain Marvel and Doctor Strange Freaky Fridaying into each other's bodies.
Hell yeah.
And not being able to use each other's powers.
Love a Freaky Friday.
I love.
So they're just useless humans now.
Yeah, they're great. Both like, how do you make your hands go? It's great.
Awesome fun. Nothing to do with War of the Realms, but one of the best comics of the year so far, Meet the Skrulls.
Man, why am I so dumb? I'll read it in trade.
It'll be a great trade. Because there were moments in this, having read it month to month, where I was like, oh, who's that again? Mm. Especially when every character can morph into any other character, because that's what Skrulls do.
That is complicated.
So Meet the Skrulls is about a bunch of undercover Skrulls, posing as a regular family. Mm-hmm. So you have a family of five. It's about them infiltrating different, like basically, like the enemies of the world, and also the enemies of like the Skrull home world in a way too, because mm-hmm. they've been on this mission for so long that they've kind of severed ties. But yeah, it's about like the tragedy of raising children. No matter what race they are on Earth, they're inevitably going to form attachments to things that they see on Earth,
mm-hmm.
and having to become a bloodthirsty killer like your parents want you to. Is going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of tragic moments in this. Like, I don't want to talk too much about the plot with that, because I don't want to give away all the twists and turns. But the final reveal of this, like the story ends really, really well. And you know, we don't know if any of the characters are going to show up again, but it's highly suggested that maybe they're already in books.
Oh, that's pretty fun. That is a fun thing about the Skrulls.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe read this book, because you never know when any of the characters might suddenly reveal themselves in any one of your Marvel books that you're currently reading. However, it was I'd say the clue is it could be any of Nick Lowe. He's the editor of this, so any of the books that he edits for Marvel.
Okay.
Hopefully we see these characters showing up again soon.
Yeah.
It was written by Robbie Thompson and art by Nico Henrichon. I've loved Nico Henrichon's work over the years. Obviously, Pride of Baghdad with Brian K. Vaughan is excellent. And yep. He did some excellent Dennis Hopeless written issues of Doctor Strange during Secret Empire, which were like the highlight of that entire event for me.
Mm-hmm.
This was the series where I realized how much I really love him as an artist. And then Robbie Thompson as well is totally someone that flies under the radar. He's, you know, done a lot of work for Marvel over the years, created Silk.
Yep.
He did that really fun Sorcerer's Supreme book.
Yes, he did.
That was really great too. Just so many like fun issues over the years, and I've never really appreciated him for being a very awesome writer, and he definitely is.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to seeing more Skrulls, but also more of those two creators in the future. Hopefully on another Meet the Skrulls like follow-up. This book was great.
Yeah, cool.
That and the Winter Soldier like miniseries, like two of my favorite kind of surprises of the year.
Hmm.
Just great minis.
I
know.
And I'm so like, I really feel like I should have read the Bucky series.
Yeah, I mean, they're both going to be out in trade in less than a month. Yeah. Maybe you can read them in all that spare time you're about to have.
Woo!
Savage Avengers, issue number 2, written by Jerry Duggan with art by Mike Diodato. Wow, I actually forgot that Mike Diodato did art on this.
Yeah, I know, right? And I sort of like, I feel like I should really love this book. But I don't love Diodato's art or something, so it's just not super appealing to me, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's enough character moments in it that I enjoy quite a lot that I'm going to stick with it for a while. This is like the weird eventual team-up of like Punisher, Blade, yeah.
Dr. Voodoo,
Conan and Wolverine. I think Elektra's going to show up at some point as well. We don't know why they're going to suddenly become a team, but at the moment it's like them kind of being brought to face this like weird... centuries old demon deity thing.
Yeah.
Evil sorcerer man.
Classic Avengers.
But it is fun. I love the slow trickle feed of heroes and why they're joining this story to begin with.
Is it a miniseries? Like, is it limited? I reckon
this is probably an ongoing of some sort. That team is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Immortal Hulk.
Ugh.
I want to just, first of all, it's been 4 weeks since we last put an episode out.
Mm.
And in that time, we've gotten 3 issues of The Immortal Hulk.
I think part of that is Diamond. Like, I think Kings didn't receive...
Okay.
...one issue at the right time or something.
But I feel like it's almost, like, twice a month.
Yeah.
It's written by Al Ewing. It's also every single issue has art by Joe Bennett. And his art...
He's just been killing it.
His art only gets better.
Yeah.
Is he doing, like, art on a double shipping book and it's maintaining this level of quality?
I mean, or have they had this in a can for a while? I hope he's not killing himself.
It's so good.
Doing it. It's so good, man. It's so consistently enjoyable. And like, even after that arc, it's satisfying to read something that is now going for like many arcs. They didn't just have like one arc in mind. There's like this longer ongoing story. And even though maybe the Hulk in Hell stuff wasn't like as... brilliant as some of the other stuff, now it's like picked back up and is like super satisfying.
And it's become one of Marvel's best-selling books. This is even outselling Batman.
Yeah, like, which is so crazy. Like, I don't think anything has outsold Batman in the entire time that I've been working in comics, which is over 10 years. It is always the best-selling comic. Always.
But this is one of the best comics. So this, like, when this came out last year, we're like, this is like the best comic on the shelves right now.
Yeah.
And for even though that little dip, like for it to just be like accepted and by like readers, and people are just reading this shit, it makes me so happy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Al Ewing deserves a hit because he's had so many great series over the years
that have gotten ignored largely.
And the Hulk deserves a hit too. Like, when was the last time you enjoyed a Hulk series?
Absolutely. And when's the last time you saw something new and different happen with the Hulk without having to like blast him into space or create other different colored Hulks?
Well, instead, this celebrates all of the different Hulks.
Yeah.
But as different personalities that live within Banner's mind.
Yep.
Also celebrates all the different characters that we've, you know, either befriended or been killed by the Hulk over the years. or had their lives ruined by the Hulk. We have one of the most insane, like issue 18 had the most insane out of nowhere reveal of Betty Ross and what she has become.
Yep.
And it's just gone full horror again.
Yep.
And I loved every page of it.
Yeah. It's really incredible. And Joe Bennett is so crazy good on this. Like his... The different forms of Hulk that he's, like, all the sort of really gross body horror stuff has been so amazing. And the Alex Ross covers are so good.
But, like, yeah, he brought Joe Fixit back, like, and Grey
Hulk.
This
version
and,
of the Abomination.
Yeah, who is
looking, really horrific looking.
So, yeah, obviously Abomination's back, Rick Jones is back, Betty Ross is here. So many great... And, like, it's also, like, it's, like, pretty brutal as well. Like, you know, people die
a
lot in this book.
He seemed to come back a lot, but that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Hulk gets fucked up in that last issue.
Yeah. Oh, so gross. Man, it's so good.
So great.
So good.
That final page. Joe Bennett doing such work, great work on pencils, but then I've got to shout out the amazing inks by Roy Jose and Bellardino Brabo, and great colors by Paul Mounts and Rochelle Rosenberg. Just
a great comic. Pick up the trades.
Great book, yeah.
If you see them, pick them up because they sell out constantly.
Yeah. So over to Daredevil now, where Chip Zdarsky is doing the whole "this superhero is going to quit being the superhero for a while" thing.
Yep.
And it's, you know, could be described as ground we've, you know, been on many, many times, possibly even with Daredevil. But it's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's amazing that Chip is doing something that is like fairly well trodden ground, but still managing to make it incredibly compelling and like,
yeah, definitely
interesting.
And I loved issues 1-5 with Marcus Ciccetto on art. I thought was excellent. Marco Ciccetto, sorry. And Garrett Colors by Sonny Go. But then for issue 6, we have a new, I guess because this is like a new kind of era in Daredevil's life in this run. And we get an artist who I've not seen before, Lalit Kumar Sharma on pencils and Jay Leeson on inks. And I think it was referential to Ciccetto's character designs, but then like completely its own thing, and it really, really worked for me. So yeah, Daredevil is not Daredevil at the moment, but it looks like someone might put on his costume at the end.
Was a really fun issue.
Yeah, definitely fun. It's also it's the first Zdarsky book with just not a joke at all in it.
Mm.
It's a very, very dry book, but it's super enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it.
So are you reading Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man?
I'm not.
Okay. So
I found I liked what I was reading. The concept of it was that this was like all about Spider-Man, like
his neighborhood.
His neighborhood, and then it's like sent us to beneath the earth. In the first arc, and I was like, I don't need this.
Yeah. So Tom Taylor's really playing fast and loose with the concept of neighborhood. Issue 6 was a totally standalone issue. And it's the sort of thing that, like, we have seen this kind of idea done before and done really in a way that's very schmaltzy and very cheesy and makes me roll my eyes because I hate everything. Tom Taylor somehow manages to do things that are incredibly cliched, could be incredibly cheap or easy or feel really insincere, and manages to make it like something genuinely kind of special. And so this issue, we meet this character called Spider-Bite, who is a little, like, a tiny little Spider-Man who's his sidekick, and we see them taking on like really, really classic versions of the Sinister Six, and Juan Cabal does like an incredible job of making that look amazing, and there's like all these cute little moments and these cute little lessons, and then they go up against like the Sinister 60, and they fight them all. And there's like this incredible double page spread with like these tiny, tiny little panels, and you see all this stuff happen. And then you realize at the end that it's this kid is in hospital and Spidey's come in to like make his last day special. I'm like getting emotional now. And it made me cry like a baby on a bus. And
wait,
it's just really good.
You were on a bus, or that's a saying that you...
No, that's a saying. No, I was on the bus. I was on the bus and just like weeping, like the embarrassing weeping pregnant lady that I am. But man, it's a great issue.
Siobhan.
Yeah.
I complimented you earlier on the episode for not having baby brain.
I have mad baby brain.
I also didn't want to cut you off. You reviewed that comic last episode.
Oh, did I? Oh no! Did I cry last time
you
as
did.
Well?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm so embarrassed. Anyway, it's a great issue, guys. I say this only because it's massively out of print, and I recommend trying to find a copy.
Okay, sweet.
And Tom Taylor is going to be, if you're in Sydney, Tom Taylor is at Supernova this weekend. He should have copies.
Oh, cool.
So I recommend trying to find it.
Go, Tom.
That's how much I loved it. How embarrassing.
That's great. What's worse, me letting you do the entire thing or me cutting you off mid complimenting something?
Equally terrible.
Okay, we can't never win. Speaking so to you I just again. Can't win. Issue number 21 of Runaways is the last Marvel book we're going to talk about today. And it was written by Rainbow Rowell with Andre Genolet on art and Chris O'Halloran on colors. This is like, it is just straight up a soap opera comic now.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's just, I just love how it's like.
This whole issue is about Chase not being able to let go. Just let go, Chase. Move on. There's life for you after Gert.
Was it about just Gert, or was it like move on from like the idea of the Runaways being a team together? Or there's a lot of play here.
Like we're basically seeing Molly like go through puberty as well.
Yes,
it's very nice getting to like see these characters grow up and just have like a proper sort of teen book without it being like superhero shenanigans all the time.
Yeah. I'm completely used to Andre Genolet's art on this book now after Absolutely. Christopher Anker. I love his facial work for all the characters, especially Chase. And I love this introduction of who I hope will become Chase's new gal.
Yeah.
Because she seems awesome. I love this book.
Yeah. It's great.
How long do you reckon they're going to keep this going for? 21 issues is a lot more than I thought we were going to get of it.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think this is one of those like massive sleeper hits that Marvel have that people don't really necessarily talk about all the time, like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl or Unstoppable Wasp, but which sell really well in trade to libraries and schools and young people.
Yep.
And I think that this is something that will just continue on for as long as Rainbow Rowell is willing to do it.
Yeah, great. You know? Awesome. Cool. Speaking of Squirrel Girl, I need to catch up on the tie-in arc.
Yeah. I've stopped picking up Squirrel Girl because I feel bad about like depriving the shelf of copies because it always sells so well. Because I know I'm just going to love it and super enjoy it.
Yeah, I might just read the last stuff in trade. Well, actually, once they start the tie-in to War of the Realms over, I'll pick it up again for the last like two issues, I think it is, before it's gone forever. Did you know this?
No.
Oh, you're going to cry again. But no, they're ending it on their own terms.
That's
like,
great.
You know, yeah, it's just like,
wonder what
Ryan North's going to do next. Yeah. Hopefully everything.
The world is his oyster.
That's it for Marvel. Now we move over to Image. And we kick things off with a review of Paper Girls, issue number 29.
Oh, mate.
This is the second last issue of this great series by Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chang, with colors by Matt Wilson, letters by Jared K. Fletcher. Of course, this is about the Paper Girls, the team of four girls who in the 1980s went on their paper route and then got transported to the future. And this has been a crazy ride through time ever since, with all kinds of bizarre twists and turns and emotional moments for the children as they learn things about their past, present and future.
Meeting different versions of themselves across time.
Yeah, totally. This was what I thought was going to be a big fight issue, but then ended up being like a
big talking issue.
Yeah, but it was great. It was excellent. Yeah. I feel like
it's so satisfying the way this is wrapped up and like, or is wrapping up. And like when this series started, I did not think that it would get to this point. You know what I mean? Like you couldn't have possibly imagined this was going to turn into.
One of the most unpredictable comics I've ever read.
And Cliff Chang is so good. And he has become like such a, you know, the way that I think about him as an artist has totally changed because of this series, you know?
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful book.
Absolutely.
And how fun was the time capsule contest survey results in the back?
Yes.
That was really fun.
That's from the first issue, right?
Yeah. So they sent around a little survey, and if you responded, they like was making predictions about the future, and they printed it in like the second last issue, and there's some pretty funny ones.
That's great. So good. What a great book. I can't wait for that last issue. I'll have to hold off on reviewing issue 30 until you are back talking about comics.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
Maybe you can phone in.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hosting a few episodes by myself, I think.
Just the madness of Levins.
Can't wait. Assassination number 3, Kyle Starks and Erica Henderson doing a great comedic assassins book.
Mm-hmm.
You're loving this still, yeah?
I love it. I love it so much. It's so funny and it's so like, it feels like a proper 80s action movie.
Totally. We were introduced to more than 20 of the world's best assassins at the start of the series, and only three issues in, we only have seven of them left.
That's so funny.
And, like, yeah, like, I mean, part of it is, and that's at the start of issue three.
Mm.
There's significantly less at the end of it. there are deaths that are done for comedic value, and then there are deaths that are actually kind of moving and sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a wonderful book that I'm I don't know how long it's going to exist for. With its rapidly declining amount of characters, I can't imagine for that much longer.
Yeah, I don't know if it's supposed to just be a 6-issue mini, but I kind of hope so. Like, it's a very satisfying story just to tell all in one go. But I would love to see this team do more stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And I love seeing Erica Henderson do something quite sort of action packed.
Gory.
She's so good at it.
Yeah,
getting to see her be a bit gorier than she was allowed to on Squirrel Girl. It's just, yeah. And she can sell a joke like no one else.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a ton of fun. I mean, if you ever wanted to do, if you ever read a bunch of Squirrel Girl issues and thought, I wonder how Erica Henderson would draw brain matter
as
it left someone's head.
There's now you can find out.
On multiple pages of this.
But if
issue.
You love, like, classic action movies, if you're a big
Seagal fan.
Yeah.
This is like a great lampoon of those.
Yeah.
Real fun.
Super fun.
On the complete opposite scale of that is Criminal, issue number 5, by Andrew
Not
Becker
fun.
And Sean Phillips. Hey, guess if I loved this.
I assume that you fucking hated it, man.
I cannot believe how good this is.
It's so good. I mean, I can readily believe it, but it's every issue is different. Every issue is super satisfying.
Yeah, and I love that this is like this ongoing that it will like have ties. Each arc will have ties to it, but it's not necessarily, like, you know, the one story. In fact, like they're spotlighting different. They've already like chosen two issues so far to become its own graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I started, like got halfway through this, and I was like, I bet they do the same thing with this arc. This arc is like perfect.
Yeah.
It's like the femme fatale take. I mean, Brubaker has done plenty of femme fatales in his writing history, and also plenty of like, you know, tragic figures who fall in love with the femme fatales too, who you shouldn't feel for, but you do. And he's just so good at writing those flawed but lovable characters.
Absolutely.
But like, I don't know, just reading this, like, we read so many books that are, like, quote-unquote crime books, and so few of them ever show detective work being done.
Yeah.
You know, one of them is even called Detective Comics. And,
he very rarely does any detecting.
This has an amazing, like, 4 pages of a private detective doing actual detective work and what goes into tracking down who he's looking for and how he finds her and, like, the various, like, clues that are left behind as she moves from town to town and ruining men's lives in her wake. Fuck, this was so good.
So good. And then, super satisfying. And, like, if you love, like, classic sort of film noir or, like, you know, Raymond Chandler novels, like, that's obviously where Brubaker sort of pulls from a lot.
And so, yeah, Brubaker has said that this arc is going to be the death of Teague Lawless, who has been a character, like, almost like the central character of Criminal since it started. Like, an absolute, like, you know, just tragic fuck up of a character who spawned fuck up children and just like, yeah, just has just ruined so many people's lives. And we finally, like, I was like, okay, cool, it's going to be an all Teague issue. Teague doesn't show up until the very end. This is all set up for who is going to kill Teague Lawless. And God, it was good.
So good. So great.
It also contained the best thing Tom King has written in over a year.
Yeah.
And that is the sentence, Criminal is easily one of the best comics of the 21st century on the front cover.
I mean, that's such a nothing quote. Easily one of. What do you mean? It means nothing.
Speaking of amazing crime fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses. One day you're going to read this and one day you're going to be like, God damn it.
God, this is great.
What a bunch of disgusting fun. Stray Bullets is written by David Laffam. And this book has been going for a long, long time with hiatus every now and then, but like from since the early 90s, I highly recommend checking down the first 41 issues in the Uberalis edition that Image put out a couple of years ago. Sunshine and Roses with this issue has now gone on for longer than the original series. And this is actually an in-between story that occurs in between arcs during the first 41 issues of Stray Bullets.
So how long is this going for? Have they announced
that
yet?
I've got no idea. I keep thinking, okay, it's all going to wrap up here, but this is all... Stray Bullet, Sunshine and Roses has been like less than a year.
Yeah.
Whereas the first Stray Bullet's like 41 issues jumps across years. Like it's over decades. It's just like this like insane crescendo of like just horrible people trying to kill each other.
And hooray!
It's so fucking great.
That's pretty great.
There's so many weird twists and turns, and there's this brilliant character called Love, who is a black wannabe samurai.
Great.
He's also a hippie.
Great.
He wields like enormous like machete, and has like psychic connections to things.
Mm-hmm.
He's just such a great character. And in this, he revealed his last name. Yeah, his full name is. He's always been called Love. But I don't know if I missed it when he was first introduced, but in this, he calls himself, his full name is Love Yourself.
That's actually really good.
So good. But like a bunch of horrible, horrible shit happens to a lot of good and bad characters in this book. So it's not for the faint-hearted, but God, it's an absolute mess.
They're very grim.
I adore reading.
They have a very grim view of the world.
Nihilistic, for sure. Mm. Yeah, I love it. And there's not many comics like this,
yeah.
For good reason, but like the ones that do carry on for this long have to be good, and this one definitely is. You know what else is good?
Man.
Gideon motherfucking Falls.
What a comic.
Andrea Sorrentino on art with Jeff Lemire writing this one and Dave Stewart on colors. A brilliant trio of comic book creators creating a just... Fuck. I mean, like, I know Lemire lately, his thing has been, like, changing what the genre of a book is multiple times throughout a run. This is, like, just such a prime example of, like, him just kind of, like, flipping a book on its head. I mean, like, this is what it is now.
Yeah. And, like, again, this is not anywhere where I expected this book to go.
So we have, it's kind of like a interdimensional horror book.
Yeah.
Where few things are explained, but it is like this bizarre journey of this priest and...
So good. And Sorrentino is so fucking good, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Do you see on Twitter, Chip Zdarsky was like, I know I'm up for Eisner for Best Writer, but I think that you should all go vote for Jeff Lemire because he's like a great friend, but he's been doing such amazing work. Like he's an amazing writer.
That's incredible. Canadians got Canadians' backs.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of Lemire, Ascender, issue number 2.
I'm still not reading it. But it looks great.
You should.
It's a good cover.
Actually, I wouldn't recommend this to anyone who hasn't read Descender because it is very much...
Okay.
Just lots of returning characters. And,
right.
But it's doing all the right things. This is Jeff Lemire with Dustin Nguyen. Descender was like a 40-ish issue run that was entirely sci-fi about the war between robots and humans. And Ascender is now... All technology has been outlawed. And the few characters that exist in the story so far from Descender are kind of like living on the... Like, you know, in secrecy, and when technology finds them, and then all hell breaks loose, it's fucking great. This is now a universe in which magic rules.
Cool.
And like, it's when that first happened in issue number 1, I was like, oh no, magic and fantasy. But it's like magic and fantasy versus tech. That's super fun.
Yeah.
And it's drawn beautifully by Dustin Nguyen and colored beautifully by him too. Excellent watercolors.
Lovely.
And a great family story at the heart of it too. And it actually feels a lot like Saga when it first started, which is an enormous compliment.
Yeah.
Do you read issue 2 of Gogor?
Haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm very excited.
Ken Garing, I ranted about how excellent that first issue was in that it showed instead of telling.
And then this told a whole bunch?
Yeah. Not in a bad way. It just was not the fun ride of the first issue. It slowed things down considerably. It's still cool. It's about like a... weird kind of Hulk-like creature of the ground that is awakened to help fight a war in a fantasy world. And there's some fun moments in it, but yeah, a lot of, like, I don't know, kind of unnecessary.
A lot of world-building-y stuff.
Yeah, but it wasn't that interesting. Right. I really, really love Ken Garing's art, though, so I may give it another issue.
Yeah, cool.
We are reaching the finale of Black Science, another image book coming to an end.
I wonder what Miranda's going to do once all of these image books that he's doing.
Deadly Class seems to be going.
I think that's just going to continue forever.
The TV show got cancelled.
Oh, really?
And he's looking for a new home for it.
Oh.
Sci-Fi, the network, obviously spending too much money making bad Krypton comics.
There you go.
But who knows if he's going to keep Deadly Class going. That's definitely my favorite of all of his image books at the moment. And Black Science is really good. There's 3 more issues left after this one. This is issue 40. I mean, essentially, this is just about like the ultimate fuck up character, Grant, and his family finally trying to win and right all of their wrongs as they've been like, you know, like traveling from galaxy to galaxy, from timeline to timeline. It's crazy to think this has only been 40 issues. I know it's a lot of issues, but this feels like it's been going on for forever, considering how many new worlds we've been introduced to that have been destroyed. Mm-hmm. But there's a great old switcheroo at the end of this issue, and what you think has happened turns out to be the opposite, and a character that we thought was a bad guy shows up and looks like this is actually going to be his story.
Cool.
I'm into it.
That's a fun last minute.
Yeah, totally. Switch. So who knows? Hopefully the last three issues are going to be absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Finally, The Walking Dead, issue number 192.
You said something crazy happened in this, right?
So, like,
That's just how they get you.
This is Image's best-selling comic, right?
I don't know if it is still.
No, it is. I checked, okay, like, sales figures from March. This was the 30th best-selling comic of the month, and the first Image comic you see on the list. So it does sell. It still sells extremely well.
Yeah.
Obviously, people hate the TV, but still watch it, I guess. I never hear anyone talking about the comic.
No, I never hear anyone.
Like, you know, we have a group with a few hundred people in it, 1,000 even, but a lot of them are weird bots from Africa, which is
how they're my friends.
The Walking Dead, you know, no one really talks about it in there.
Mm.
I thought, especially with what happened in issue number 192, which came out a week ago, and I read it last night, and something enormous happens in it, and no one seems to be talking about it. And
what happened? Tell me.
Okay, skip forward 30 seconds if you don't want spoilers for Walking Dead. Rick Grimes, the main character, gets shot, turns into a zombie, and is then shot in the head by his son, and so now the main character is dead.
Grim. That's pretty grim.
Yeah,
Grimes. I mean, it seems like... Oh, right, sorry. So sorry. Seems like a long time coming. I remember people thinking that was going to happen like years ago.
But so it happens with little fanfare, though. It just kind of happens. I know that kind of that's how this book used
to
be.
That's Walking Dead, yeah.
Yeah, but it hasn't been like that for so long. And so when this, like, you know, Andrea, who died previously, she got this insane send-off.
Mm.
And Rick Grimes, I mean, I suppose we'll get it in issues to come, but... it just seemed so, and even one of the comics characters, his son, comments that like, oh, when this happened to Andrea, we got this, you know,
she had to
say goodbye to everyone, and he didn't. This is so unfair. So I guess this is now going to be Carl's book. But yeah, like, you know, we are approaching issue 200. I said I was going to keep reading to 200 and then decide then if I will. But at this point, definitely. This is like a crazy, like, you know, I read and got into Walking Dead because it was so unpredictable and it felt boring for the last like 50-ish or so issues.
Yeah.
And this is a massive status quo change up.
Was it sort of like, did it feel earned? Was it very satisfying? Was it sort of...
No.
Did it feel cheap?
I thought that one of the characters was going to wake up and for this issue to have been a dream at the end.
Mm.
So when it happened, I was like, oh, fuck, okay. Well, that's interesting. So I'm purely reading it out of like a morbid like curiosity to see what they do with it next. I definitely enjoyed the concept, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting, though.
Totally interesting.
It's amazing that they can still do things to shock you after it's been running for 10 plus years.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So that is Walking Dead 192. Now we move over to other publishers, mostly Dark Horse. We'll talk about She Could Fly, The Lost Pilot, issue number 3 of this second volume of She Could Fly. Written by Christopher Cantwell with Martin Marazzo and Miroslav Merva on art and colors.
I miss this.
No. You'll have to.
That was such a serious, like, sincere response from me. Just it sold out, which is like,
well, you should
I'm happy.
Read this before you leave. Because this was an insanely good issue.
Yeah.
I know I was kind of like saying like, oh, you know, it's trying to do a lot more than the first volume is. Everything comes together in like the most amazing way. And this is actually about the main character falling in love and like, you know, and obviously she doesn't completely get rid of her problems, but that seems to be a better fix for her than the medication she's been given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, his art is so great as well. Like, it's so detailed. It's amazing that he's managing sort of like 2 monthly books is like a massive workload.
And yeah, like this book looks better than it ever has. And there's some insane action scenes. There's a brilliant revenge moment for one of the characters. It's like brilliant and gory. and like just awesome.
It's such a good book.
And then there are just these sweet fucked up moments between our main character and her boyfriend. It's just great. I love it. And then you have like the grandma still around and like all this shit. Man, it's such a good series. Everyone should read this at some point in their lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a genuinely exceptional comic.
The first series is collected in trade and on the shelves at King's. You should pick that up first, obviously.
Yeah.
Do not read this without reading the first volume.
No, that would be dumb.
Black Hammer 45, the little mini-series written by Jeff Lemire with Ray Fawkes, Matt Kent, Charlene Kent, and Murray Enger, which was all about... It was a World War II story featuring various characters kind of... I couldn't work out the link to... This is the least essential spin-off series in the Black Hammer universe.
Agreed.
So far. I enjoyed it as a war story. I didn't enjoy it as something in this universe.
Yeah, I thought it was like fine.
Yeah.
Did you know World War II was bad?
Look, I really
turns out it was bad.
I love Matt Kent's art. And
yeah, I don't know if it super suited the story, but
I don't know, I definitely think that like that's some great shit. Him drawing like frantic
that's true.
Plane.
That's true.
Plane dog fights in the air. That's good shit. But I don't know. I think this is a very strong issue. But this is definitely a skippable Black Hammer universe thing.
It'll probably become relevant at some point. You got to assume.
But, yeah, totally. I'm
right this second, inessential.
There's a few like weird tie-ins. Like one character goes on to start Weird Industries, and then there was obviously what's his name, Abraham Slam, showed up in one of the issues. But beyond that, it doesn't really feel tied into the main series at all. And besides the name, but they seem to have no connections to that character or Hammer either.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird. Did you read 5 years yet?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Terry Moore, this is the coming together of all of his characters.
Mm-hmm.
So from Strangers in Paradise, Rachel Rising.
Echo
and Motor Girl. And there's 5 years left until the world ends, unless our characters from all of these different books come together and try to stop it. And this book was all about the characters from, Echo.
From Rachel Rising. From Echo. Oh, really?
Sorry, Rachel Rising, my bad. Rachel Rising, yeah.
I haven't even read it and I knew that.
I'm pregnant. It's fine. it was so grim and such a bummer, but I loved it.
But it still had moments of sort of humor, I would say.
Yeah, totally. So, Zoe is like this girl who in the 50s was inhabited by a demon. For 50 years.
Okay.
And the demon had her kill hundreds of people over the decades. And in Rachel Rising, quite early on, they rid her of the demon. And she's just like this girl who stays forever young, who has killed because of a demon and now loves killing.
Yeah.
Had her and the main character from Rachel herself trying to track down some names that could hopefully help stop the end of the world. I just loved how contained it is. We haven't seen any of these characters interacting together yet, even though the front cover clearly shows the gorilla from Motor Girl helping Zoe up a mountain with a bomb.
And also, as someone who hasn't read Rachel Rising or Echo, it's still totally accessible and enjoyable. There were definitely things that went over my head for sure, but it's still entirely possible to enjoy this even if you're just a Strangers in Paradise fan.
This was, what's cool about all of these comics coming together is that, Strangers in Paradise is, a romance /
spy
book. Echo is an action book. Rachel Rising is a horror book. And then Motor Girl is a drama about PTSD with aliens in it. I like that they haven't really betrayed the tone of any of these franchises in bringing them all together.
Yeah.
Just good shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So finally from IDW, I read Ghost Tree issue number 2, written by Bobby Curnow with Simon Gain on art, colors by Ian Herring with Becca Kinsey. This is about a man who returns to his home in Japan and finds that he can talk to his dead grandpa and also ghosts.
So are you still enjoying this one?
Yeah, I love Simon Gain's art. And the story is it's quaint, but it's good. It's he's able to talk and hang out with his old love who is now dead. And there is something wrong in the ghost world that looks like he's going to have to, help. So these ghosts don't die again.
Cool.
It's fun. Nice. It's nice. It's a sweet little book. It looks brilliant. The art, I love Simon Gaines' art. Look how good it is.
Just why would you care if ghosts died again?
Because then you can't talk to them anymore. I don't know. Okay. Or they get sent somewhere that isn't nice.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I'm glad I've won you over to this. Ghosts are people too, Siobhan.
Prove it.
That's it.
Great.
Those are the books I read. I've been reading heaps of manga too.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about it. What have you been enjoying?
I read The Promised Neverland.
Okay.
Which is like a teen horror manga. It's almost like what if Runaways was a horror book?
Okay.
But also they live on like orphan farms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like they have these orphans that are like that live on farms where they're tested constantly. And it's like the first 50-ish chapters are about them escaping. And then after they do, it's about what the rest of the world is like.
Mm.
And it's really, really fun.
Cool.
That's a Shonen Jump one. I've pretty much just been burning through heaps of Shonen Jump manga. I read this awesome one about I should look up what it is. Can you look up what's a male housewife? House husband. House husband, Yakuza.
Why did that both take us so long?
House husband, Yakuza manga. And so this is one that I've been reading. It's coming out through Viz later in the year.
Goku Shufudu?
The way of the
house husband?
Yeah, and it's about like someone who used to be a very high up member of the Yakuza. And he now has given it all up to become a house husband. And it's like a goofy comic strip manga.
Yeah.
And it's just like him like bumping into like old people from like, you know, his crime background while he's going to like cooking demonstrations or trying to make it to a sale. And like, it's just so up your alley.
That sounds amazing. That sounds so fun.
And so it's like him.
It looks great.
He's got the art's fantastic. He has all. He looks like a villain, but he wears an apron.
That's so good.
And it's super fun. So when that comes out through Viz, I definitely recommend picking that up.
Yeah. Oh man, Viz are doing such good shit.
Then I read all of a book called Demon Slayer.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
Demon Slayer just got turned into an anime this year.
Okay.
And Demon Slayer is a book about a family in like a few hundred years ago in Japan,
mm-hmm.
living up in a mountain, and the eldest boy goes down the mountain to do some work so that he can bring some money back to the family. And when he returns, a demon has slayed his mother and his brothers and sisters, except for one sister who has been turned into a demon.
Oh no!
So he tries to keep her from eating humans.
Cool.
And keep basically have a hold on to a human side, and then also he becomes a demon slayer with a special sword. And so it is a very, very good book. So I'm reading those concurrently now. It is so fun. Every Sunday the Shonen Jump app gets updated,
mm-hmm.
and every month I have like two new series added to the list of, so I have like eight ongoing series. I'm reading mm-hmm. like the new samurai book by the guy who created Naruto.
Okay.
Which is really, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it's getting better and better. It's like a lot of crazy high concept ideas with brilliant art. Man, that app is just the fucking best thing to happen to my life. It's so
you
good.
You have two children, man.
Oh, sure.
But they know Shonen Jump app. That's what you will call your third child, Shonen Jump app.
On Sunday, I get woken up by them and then I get sick because I haven't had enough sleep. Shonen Jump app doesn't do
babies,
that.
Babies, that's true. I've read 19 out of 22 volumes of 20th Century Boys.
Fuck yeah, that's awesome.
And so my friend Trish gave me 19 volumes.
Wow.
Which I've now passed on to another person.
That's amazing.
Keep the cycle going.
So you've tracked down the last ones.
Yeah, now I have to track down three final volumes of a series which is not in print and is currently being reprinted in these like really cool oversized
they're so
volumes,
nice, aren't they?
Which I recommend picking up because 20th Century Boys is fucking incredible, man. It is so good. It's like this crazy... I don't know if I've talked that much about the plot or if I've just gone, it's amazing, it's amazing, it's amazing. But it's about these kids in the 70s,
yep.
who they have like a cool clubhouse, and their leader of their gang is called Kenji,
mm-hmm.
and they play this game where they make up this book called the Book of Prophecy.
Right.
And then as adults, there's this scary cult, or there's this group that are run by this guy called The Friend, and they're called The Friends. And slowly all of the prophecies from the Book of Prophecy start coming true.
Right.
And they realize that it's someone who was in their gang when they were kids.
Shit. Yeah, right.
They have to take him down, but then it jumps forward into the future again, and they've been blamed with all the horrible shit that happened in 2000, and they're seen as terrorists. Man, it's like, it's so good. It's so fucking good. Urasawa is so great. It's unbelievable.
Is this, what other Urasawa books have you recommended over the years?
Pluto
is like, yeah,
Monster, oh, yep. Master Keaton.
Okay.
That's all the stuff that, as far as I know, is available in print in English.
Yep.
And I would just get anything with his name on it. Like, he's fucking incredible. So everything good. He does is exceptional.
Oh, yeah. If you want to get the, I think they're called the Perfect Edition.
Yeah.
I
have the Perfect Editions of Monster, which I think is of a similar length.
Okay, right, sure.
And that's a really, like, that's just a straight up serial killer sort of thriller.
Mm-hmm.
20th Century Boys is sort of a, I don't even know how you would categorize it, but it's so
good.
Clever.
Shit.
Good shit. Some extremely good shit.
If you want to check them out, they're like $30 in Australia, each of the Perfect Editions. And
we've got them at Kings.
At Kings, or you can get them at madman.com.au.
Yeah.
They do a ton of great manga on the Madman website too.
Yeah.
And regular sales too. So definitely check out madman.com.au.
I've also gone back and I've been rereading Seven Soldiers of Victory. Have you read that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, love that. Good. So good. What's your favorite character within that?
This is Grant Morrison. It's so hard.
Grant Morrison, there's seven different, like, I mean, the most well-known character who's in the seven is Zatanna.
Yeah.
And then there's like some just complete weird niche.
Yeah, it's like Clarion, the Witch Boy, the Guardian.
The Bullet,
yeah.
And I think there's four issues each.
Yes, so they're character. All these like four-issue miniseries. And the kind of fun idea is that they're all fighting the same villain without knowing it. So they're kind of a superhero team that never teams up.
Yep.
But, like, the artists that he worked with on that was so amazing. Like, the Zatanna series is all Ryan Sook, and it's, like, it's the best Zatanna's ever looked, and it's so good. Like, the story that's in the first two issues where she accidentally summons her perfect man, who's, like, an evil demon who takes the form of whatever she wants. She's like, oh, my God, I'm so fucked up. But it's just, it's exceptional. I really recommend. It's available, I think, in, like, two big trades, and it's super worth tracking down.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying. It's so enjoyable. I love the Guardian stuff as well, with Cameron Stewart did the interiors.
Yeah, I wish Cameron Stewart did more. That's what I was trying to remember.
Yeah.
And then there was, Clarion is Fraser Irving.
Yeah.
Pascal Ferry is on Mr. Miracle. Mr. Miracle, there you go.
Yeah.
And,
but it's the different Mr. Miracle. It's not Scott Free.
Right. And then, the Bulleteer is Yannick Paquette. That's right. And Frankenstein. Oh, that's probably my favorite, actually, with Doug Mankey on art on that one. And then there's, like, a bookend, like zero issue and a first issue, mm-hmm. that you read before and after you read all the miniseries, and that has art by J.H. Williams III.
Yeah. It's so, like, it's one of my favorite things that Morrison has ever done.
That's so good.
Superhero-wise.
What else is next in your Morrison reread?
I've been dipping in and out of his JLA run as well, just like a couple of issues here and there. That's very enjoyable.
I want to do Filth. I've never done that. The one he wrote about porn.
Oh, I don't think I've read that. I don't think I've even seen that.
I have, like, a while ago that Vertigo did a big sale on Comixology, and I just bought everything that Grant Morrison had ever done.
Yeah.
So once a year, I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I will read all of... I've still never done all the Invisibles. I should do that.
Yeah, I've started trying to read the Invisibles, and it is... because I have the big omnibus, which is, like, the most annoying way to read comics ever, because it's like, I can't take that on the fucking bus, can I? And it's, like, it's a dense, heavy read, but I really want to...
It's that era of
justify
Vertigo.
Justify its space on my shelf.
That era of Vertigo. I think it takes like a few issues and then suddenly it clicks and you're like, I'm used to reading these books like this now.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, it is like it's wordiness on a level that is...
Yeah, like yet. I mean, the first issue references the like the anarchist writer Kropotkin.
That's right, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, Morrison, you're crazy. I love you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Siobhan, all the best for the next few weeks.
Thanks.
Everyone, right now, just cross your fingers and pray to whichever deity you pray to that Siobhan has quick labor.
Yeah. That's my concern is that it's going to be too quick.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm mostly concerned about. I know that sounds insane, but I don't want them to like shoot out of me like a fucking bullet. You know what I mean?
Okay, so that's what we'll pray that doesn't happen.
I only just made it to the hospital last time.
Right, sure. I think, for the next at least 1 month, we'll give you, as soon as Siobhan lets me know that she is keen to read and talk about comics again, this will come back on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to let it go away completely. I can't read things without talking about them now. Even if that means talking to myself, I will do it. So Serious Issues will exist as a monthly podcast while Siobhan's taking some time off.
And chances are I'm still going to be reading anyway.
I know you
because
will,
I just have no self-restraint.
great.
Great.
But at least, hey, at least this podcast is a lot less of a workload for us these days. So, yeah.
Thanks for being so understanding, guys.
So thank you so much for listening. If you do want to support the podcast, we give you very little in return now, but there's a bunch of bonus episodes that you can access should you want to, you know, make a one-time donation to our Patreon just to say thanks for, you know, for the free entertainment.
We would appreciate it.
patreon.com/seriousnewspodcast. There's a whole bunch of bonus material that we put there. We did an awesome episode all about Saga, which we've never made available to all other listeners. It's probably one of the best things I've ever done, actually. It's just a nice way to say thank you if you feel inclined to do so. patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. There's probably about 10 hours of bonus episodes to listen to if you're missing your Siobhan and Lev dog fix. But if you would like to chat with us about comics, I'm sure Siobhan won't be able to pull herself away from Facebook.
No.
Even if there was a thing that turned you into a zombie, like in Deceased. but yeah, we have a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/
Aren't we already serious zombies? You know what I'm saying?
Serious is a podcast, of course. thank you so much for listening. And thanks to King's Comics for giving us these comics to read, to talk about. Again, come find them, kingscomics.com, 403 George Street. Siobhan, all the best
for
this little dude to come out.
Appreciate it.
I want to come out at about 15 kilometers an hour.
Cheers. Okay. I think that's achievable.
Manageable. Thanks so much. See you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.